bring that back.
When I move it, move.
Just like that.
When I move it, move.
Just like that.
When I move it, move.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, APJ, bring that back.
Well, and welcome to the Coach's Box, episode 141, and this is the last show of 2011. Not forever, but we're going to push on to the Dream Team Finals, which I've made my Dream Team League final, Molly. I managed to see off Nathan Grimer this week, but only because, of course, he ate two donuts, and he looked like it out on the field. He looked like he'd eaten two donuts before he got out there. But anyway, I'm in my grand final against Team Flossie, which of course is Amanda Warney's little friend. But what about you, Molly? I think you might have got knocked out fairly early, didn't you?
Well, what you don't mention is this is the minor premiership you're in. I'm in the I was in the major league and got knocked out by Warney first week.
Winning four consecutive games is a hard thing, my friend. Doesn't matter what half of the draw you're in.
Yes, that's true. Well, you didn't win four consecutive games. You've only won...
three up to... Well, actually, no, you're right. So, of course, I did actually win. I have a bye the second week. But anyway, winning three games in a row, Molly.
I'm in my Nick Maxwell League final, and I'm in two out of my four leagues. Mm. So I'm pretty happy with that, and I'm sitting... just one out, one back from Roy in the Maxi's knockoff Maxi League. I've got to make up 127 this week to take that out, or 128 actually to take it out.
Yes, I think I'm 160 odd in front of Dr. Dream Team, and but I believe he looks like he's going to be eating a donut unless Ian Callanan plays this week. So hopefully, I'm not looking like I'm going to eat a donut, although. This is going to be a very difficult week, Molly. We've got a lot of players who are out or looking like being out. Of course, we do record this on a Wednesday night, so we don't have the teams available, but there's going to be some carnage tomorrow. I can feel it coming.
I hope so. I've still got two trades left, and I saved four trades, and unless there's some carnage this week, I'm going to feel quite silly holding on to that many trades for this long that it didn't pay off for me.
Yep, well, I've got one left, so I can cover someone. But yes, well, hopefully we'll have to throw all those plates up in the air at once. But anyway, now just before we get on to the round review, Molly, for the last time this year, I don't think we talked about this last week. Of course, there was news came through recently that Vape Media, the operators of the AFL Dream Team and the Herald Sun Supercoach competitions, is actually moving to Docklands. I think they might have moved last week. We didn't talk about this last week, did we, Molly?
No, we didn't talk about it. I saw it on Twitter over the week. But,
I think Peter Janglowski has been, who of course is the head of Vapor Media, has been tweeting about that, and he's just moving in and putting new furniture in. Now, of course, I haven't spoken about this with him directly, and I'm just I'm speaking here without any authorization of any official or unofficial parties, but let's put two and two together, Molly, and let's say that this is a precursor to the AFL doing. Now, this is a bit of industry talk, so again, fast forward 5 minutes if you're bored terribly by all this sort of stuff. But let's say, for the purposes of argument, Molly, that this is a precursor to the AFL taking over Vapor Media and bringing the production of Dream Team in-house, and thus cutting the Herald Sun out of the Supercoach business in terms of not allowing Vapor Media to run the Supercoach business anymore. So the Herald Sun in that scenario would have to look around the industry and say, well, what do we do for Supercoach now? Who do we go with? So whoever they go with presumably would have a bit of a carte blanche to rearrange the rules of Supercoach. So I suppose if you were asked, Molly, what would be the things you'd want to change about Supercoach, assuming the Dream Team is still there, what do you think you could change about Supercoach to make it more competitive and to sort of, you know, jumpstart the growth in the industry, which has been flat the last couple of years?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, they've been a little bit more successful than DT, and I mean, a lot of the things that I would have been thinking about in the past are more tweaks rather than big jumps. We always talk a lot about draft leagues, but I'm not sure that would. I mean, it would give more week-to-week action for sites and the likes, but I'm not sure whether it would get the punter involved. I guess making it easier to have work leagues or work groups or the likes may have some sort of helping to get it more ingrained into companies and the likes may help there. But as far as the rules go, I mean, in some ways for the general pun, I'm always surprised Supercoach is more popular than Dream Team because of the trickier scoring and the like. So that sort of makes it tough. But
I was actually asked to provide a list, such a list this week, and I produced a list of five things I thought could happen. And I suppose I'm a bit of a strange one to be actually talking about this because, of course, I did try to make a competition with my own rule changes, in 2009 in the form of Lethal League, which, of course, doesn't run anymore. So I may be a bit biased about this, but I guess I came up with five changes that I'd like to see. And I suppose putting them in order, Molly, this is probably something where you could sort of give me feedback on whether I got these in order right or not. I thought the number one most important thing would be introducing unlimited trades, because that increases the interest later on in the season. Obviously, moving from 20 to 24 trades this year, I think, has helped that people have been able to get the teams that they want. I certainly have experienced that myself. I've had a team towards the end of the year I've been much more happy with than in previous years. Now, maybe that's because I'm a bad trader. You can certainly level that accusation with me, but I feel like I've enjoyed this year a bit more because I've been able to cover a bit more with trades. And obviously with unlimited trades, there's no restrictions, so you can cover long-term injuries with no repercussions, apart from a few, obviously, dollars lost from price fluctuations. So I think that's the number one thing. The second thing would be higher price premiums for rookies and mature ages. And also, possibly, this is something which I haven't said before on this show, just thinking about this week, actually also a premium for the top, you know, 5, 7, 10 in each position. So both of these things would encourage more attractiveness to the middle range of players, so that picking, say, a Nathan Van Berlo a month ago and then enjoying his 120 average over the last month might actually be possible, because no one's going to do that now, but they might actually do that under this system. So that'd be the second one. The third one would be rolling lockout. That needs no explanation, I don't think. The fourth would be changing the mix of positions to increase the amount of midfielders. And the fifth one would be to disengage the positional designations from what champion does to make them more fantasy relevant. So increasing the number of multi-positional players, just to make it a better fantasy game, which, of course, champion can't necessarily do because, obviously, they've got other priorities with their positional designations. But for fantasy purposes, it'd be a better game if you had players with more designations. So do you think I've got that mix right, Molly?
I think it's interesting mix. I think to some degree, if you're going to have unlimited trades, you're going to need some other method for penalising or what. You know, you wouldn't want to be changing 24 players in, 24 players out every week. I mean, I think that would make it hard.
Why not?
Well, I think it, you know, I guess it's just a big change compared to what we've got now. I guess I can see that. With that, maybe part of it could be some sort of reward penalty, or I wonder whether, you know, thinking about it, whether a stock market-y type idea where the more people that jump on a player, the more expensive they get, as well as their scoring or whatnot. So you'd still have the salary cap?
I think that'd be way too complex. But yeah, there will still be a salary cap. Look, with the Lethal League system, there is still a salary cap. There is still price fluctuations, although in that system, the price fluctuations happened from the first week, not from the third week. Obviously the price fluctuation formula would need to change. I think I managed to get that balanced in Lethal League, and it's not, you know, humongously difficult from a mathematical point of view, because I'm not world's greatest mathematician, but I seem to manage to get it to work in that competition. I don't think it's all that difficult mathematically, but Yeah, look, I mean, look, obviously what you said about it being a too big a change, that is I think, the biggest problem, I think, with the industry, is that the users are now used to the way the Dream Team and Supercoach work, and they would almost be resistant to change at this point. So while I've been complaining about there being no innovation, there's also, it's been so static for so long that innovation would actually be, you know, be in some quarters, in some parts of the user base, be seen as a bad thing, and they get disillusioned because they're used to the rules being changed. I mean, it's the opposite of the actual AFL, Molly, where the rules change every year. We've actually had the opposite in fantasy.
I wonder if part of the issue too is, and I guess this is part of it as well, is that, well, you've got two competing products in Supercoach and Dream Team, because they run under, you know, maybe there's very few differences in the rules. You know, the scoring system is about the only difference between the two competitions. Mm. So as Dream Team gets, you know, rolling lockouts for some rounds, so does Supercoach for the same rounds. And as this year, when Supercoach, when Dream Team went to 24 trades and, you know, three players in, you know, all the major categories on the bench, so did Supercoach. So you don't get any innovation by two different sets of people coming up with new rules.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, is that I'm saying, you know, what would you do to change to Supercoach? It may actually be that if there is a new operator of Supercoach, they may stick to the same thing because they're the market leader now. They have like 400,000 registrants as opposed to 300,000, and it may be Dream Team that has to innovate because they're the ones who are behind. So, this advice may not be for whoever that operates Supercoach. It might actually be for Peters, who I'm sure would love to innovate, would love to tinker with the rules and increase the Dream Team registrations that way. But he may have just been, a hamstring, as we say, by the fact that he had to provide the same product to both providers.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, if this situation does come to pass, I think it's going to be good for the fantasy industry because one or both of them will start to innovate again.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about that, what I was sort of getting at with that, about having two differently run things, even if they start off at the same place, unless they just wait and see what the other one does and copies them. You know, if both sides only change two things about the competition each year, the chances are they're not going to be the same two things. So slowly you're going to get a drift apart. So it's not going to be a huge change to people of just throwing everything out and starting again. It's going to be gradually the two will get different. So if Dream Team does rolling lockouts every round, but Supercoach does, unlimited trades, and then, you know, Dream Team does, I don't know what, but, you know, like
multi-positional
trading, and then Supercoach does something else, you know. Slowly they'll drift apart, and that way you'll get more innovation because you're getting four, you know, you might only get two changes per year per competition, but that means four changes overall.
Well, if this does come to pass, and of course, you know, the reasoning behind this would be that the AFL obviously knows that it's falling behind in registrations, and that's the only move really available to it. And it has, and obviously, Demetrio has been talking in the last week or two about bringing things in house. He's brought Jeff Slattery Publishing in house. Now it's going to be AFL Media, and yes, obviously, so the fact that of Vapor Media moving to Docklands, and their office is going to be within walking distance of AFL House. That's obviously the reasoning behind that. So I just hope, Molly, for Peter's sake, Peter Jankelowski down at Vapor Media, that they don't put Kevin Bartlett in charge of the rule changes,
because
that'd be a bad result for all. Mm-hmm. Rather than five changes, it'd be 15 changes, and none of them would be tested. They'd just get foisted upon the public, and we wouldn't be able to do anything about them until the next year when there'd be another 15 changes. But anyway, so.
True. This is all true.
Mm.
I mean, if you're looking at rule things else to make, you know, not big things, but just things to make the competitions better, I've been long saying I'd love to have reversible trades up until deadline.
Mm.
I mean, I think that would make it easier for the more casual player, you know, because there's just sometimes when, you know, some people just aren't available at deadline or aren't sure that they'll be near a computer or a device where they can update it around deadline. So to be able to make the trade early in the week, knowing that if something happens late in the week that was unforeseen, that they can reverse that trade and fix it up if they're about later in the week, I think that's sort of good for people as well.
Yep, well, the suggestions are already flying in from the chat, but anyway, we probably should move on, because this does get boring for some people who don't necessarily want to hear industry inside baseball. As Jay Rosen said during the week about political commentary, but yes, we're about football here, so let's get on to the round review, Molly. So we have to go straight obviously, to Fremantle and Collingwood on the Friday night. Fremantle, well, I think there was a thread on Big Footy this week, Molly, saying pick a team from the remaining Fremantle players, and there's not really that many to choose from because they've only got 25 players or something, or even less than that to choose from. So I suppose the big question is, you own Nathan Fyfe, as do the top three who are left in Dream Team, by the way. Now I am never going to pick Jason Pourpleasier again because I don't trust his shoulder. He certainly, obviously, he was shut down earlier this year with that shoulder, which he had injured constantly the previous year. So the question for me is, Fyfe is obviously I presume he'll be a fantasy forward next year, and a lot of the questions tonight will be about next year, let's face it, because there's only a few decisions left to make. Nathan Fyfe next year, Molly, can you trust that shoulder, which will be reconstructed in the off season, as early as this week, he'll go under. I think he's already been under the knife. So Fyfe the knife is under the knife.
Yes.
So next year, can you trust that shoulder not to start popping out like it did with Pourpleasier this year, and for him to be shut down early?
I really think there's two ways you can look at it. As you say, is it going to pop out? Is it going to fall off? Is the way I like to describe it all year. Is it going to fall off, or the other way you can look at it, apparently he's carried it all year and he's averaged 98. Yep. What can he do with two healthy shoulders, assuming he could get two healthy shoulders? So, I mean, that's part of the reasoning for me. I mean, he's had such a good year, 98 average. I think he's almost the top forward, that it's going to be hard to look past him if he can get through pre-season successfully with that shoulder. And especially if he maintains that dual eligibility that he's had this year.
I guess apart from the injury issue, there's another issue, of course, which is that Matthew Pavlich is apparently going to be playing forward next year. So I presume that means Fyfe is going to move up the ground a little bit more. So his scoring might be even greater.
That's it. That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, what will happen with another pre-season under Barlow and Mundy and Sandilands all backfiring? So, you know, there's a lot to like about him. But, you know, I guess that injury is going to be the worry. You know, we've had other players that have had breakout years but are injury-prone, like Higgins and the like. So it's going to be a tricky one because of how well he has scored this year.
Right, on the Collingwood side of that game, Molly, I'm just looking at the scores of Scott Pendlebury and Dane Swan in the Round 8 game against Geelong, of course, though, the Collingwood playing Geelong this week on the Friday. Pendlebury delivered his second worst score of the year in that Geelong game. Swan delivered 115, which is a little bit below his average, but still fairly acceptable as a captain option. So I think we haven't yet seen, if you're not subscribed to Dream Team Pro, I don't think we've seen Calvin's choice for...
No, he's put it out.
Has he? So who has he chosen?
He's got Dane Swan first, then Mitchell, then Ablett, Boyd and Rockliffe.
So are you on board with Swan as captain? I suppose Pendlebury as well. I've had Pendlebury captain and supercoach for the last 2 months, and he's done me proud. He's certainly delivered another being 150-odd in Supercoach this week. So I suppose for the two competitions, I suppose those two are the main, they're probably specialists in either competition. Pendlebury's for Supercoach, Swan for Dream Team. Do you risk those guys as captains this week against in a game which we don't really know how it's going to go, Molly?
It's really a tricky one, it is. I mean, Swan did score 115 the last time he played Geelong. It's slightly one of his worst teams, according to Fan Footy. But, you know, that was a pre-Arizona game, and this is a post-Arizona game where, you know, he's scored 100 each week since he's been in Arizona, with his worst game being against Carlton with 101.
Good point.
And apart from that, 118 or better, including, you know, two 150 pluses or three 145 pluses. So I find it hard to go past Swan, but then again, with Mitchell likely to play up on the Gold Coast, although, you know, maybe there's a chance of a subbing if he gets any sort of knock at all to that knee.
Don't go too early with the Hawk Talk, Molly.
I think I will probably stay with Swan and risk that. I mean, the other issue with that is that most people probably will still go with Swan. So if you're chasing someone or up against someone, it's almost a nullifying move to go Swan. If you think you're in trouble against them, then maybe you will look at others to try and make up for some other shortcomings in your side.
Mm. All right. Well, let us get on to Hawk Talk, Molly. Now, of course, this being the last game of the year, I thought we'd have a special Hawk Talk. So I've got fully 11 Hawthorn players that I'd have down for Hawk Talk. So let's go through them one by one, Molly. This may take at least an hour on its own. We could actually cut this out to be its own special podcast this evening, because, frankly, I don't care what anyone says. We're going to do an extended Hawk Talk. So, now, of course, the reason for this extended Hawk Talk is because Hawthorn is playing the Gold Coast this week. And so it is almost the case, Molly, that every single possibly fantasy-relevant player is actually startable this week. So, I mean, even players who not many people would have and would just be stowing on their bench to start being fantasy relevant this week. So I suppose we'll start with the absolute roll gold premiums, Molly, in terms of captaincy options. So Mitchell and also, let us not forget, Lance Franklin as captaincy option, given that Franklin against, I think, was it Port a couple of weeks ago, delivered us a very nice captain quality fantasy score. How many possessions does Mitchell get? How many goals does Franklin get? And is it going to beat the likes of Pendlebury and Swan?
Well, I think both of them have the ability to. I'm probably less bullish on Franklin up against Bock, who has played him well in the past. He did score 108 against him early in the season. If for some reason, and I haven't heard anything to suggest that it would happen, that Bock was out, that would make me more appealing to select Franklin. In fact, it probably might change my mind on it and take a bit of a risk on him. But Mitchell, absolutely, he's an option for captain. 132 against Gold Coast last time round, and apart from a 96 against Carlton, he hasn't scored under 100 since round 10 against the Bulldogs. So you'd be feeling pretty safe that he's going to rack up 100, and especially against the Gold Coast, unless something happens where he gets subbed out early or doesn't play at all.
Put it this way: now we're not going to speak a lot about the number one, the winning dream team teams this week, because I think people might have got a bit sick of it. But because Schellers, who has now dropped to number two after being number one for a couple of months now, I think, believe he's about 80 points behind. Would you recommend to him to make, because Sam Mitchell is a bit of a unique amongst himself and the top three, would you recommend making him captain just to see if you, I mean, he might deliver you 150 and deliver you an extra 60 over the equivalent player in the opposition centre line?
Would I advise? Well, he's got to make up 80-odd points or a little bit more than that. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's one area that he could look at doing it. There's really two ways of looking at it. You're going to have some uniques, and do you back them in, or do you have to make it up in that captaincy move? So do you take the nil or draw and then hope to make it up elsewhere? So I think there's some logic in that idea of him taking Mitchell in as captain. I wouldn't advise him to, but it's definitely a good option.
When you're behind, you actually maximise the points of difference. I think that's what you do. It's when you're in front that you're trying to minimise them. That'd be my theory anyway. All right, so moving past those two, so startability of Propolo, of course, delivered 129. Is he a rolled gold start?
I would say pretty much he would be, yeah. I mean, he scored 68 against Gold Coast last time round, and, well, I actually, now I think about it, no, I wouldn't be looking, I'd still be looking to keep him on the bench if I could.
Really? After 129? He looked sensational on the weekend. Wow,
he did, but I mean, in some ways, a lot of his work is chasing and tackling, and if Gold Coast can't get their hands on the ball, you don't do a lot of chasing, you don't do a lot of tackling. The ball could stay in a lot of the Good Hawks players' hands a lot. So, you know, I mean, I think, well, I guess in many ways, I'm hoping that people don't have this decision for my own benefit, that there's a bit more carnage than that. But, yeah, I think there would be better options. It may also depend on who's in and out for Hawks, because there's a lot of guys in the Box Hill side that I think that the Hawks would like to give a look into this weekend. So some of the players you would think ahead of him may be out of the side having a rest.
Now, I would start Poplo over almost anyone, apart from maybe Goddard. He's in your top seven, whatever. Because, look, I'll give you my reasoning. First of all, there's no one that needs to play a lockdown role in that forward line. He doesn't need to play forward. The role he played against the Bulldogs was a Jared Harbrow-like role, and the Bulldogs forward press, obviously, young, what's his name?
Dalhouse,
and also Schofield. They had added a lot to the forward press about a month ago, but they've really fallen away, I think. And the Bulldogs forward press was nowhere. It was absolutely nowhere. The Hawthorn, you know, the small defenders were able to rebound with no compunctions. You know, obviously Birchall and Guerra both scored 110 plus, and Pueblo even more. And that is, of course, one of the hallmarks of Gold Coast this year, that their press is just nowhere. They have got no press whatsoever. So, assuming the Pueblo plays the same role, he could score the same as he did last week, and so could Birchall, and so could Guerra. So, so that'd be my reasoning. I would not be benching Poplo for anyone who's remotely near him in price, I would say. But that's just my thinking. Now, one player who's probably a bit on the edge now, of course, Luke Bruce. Some people might still have him. Of course, he was priced at rookie price early in the season, so. If you still do have him in your forward line, Molly, he did score 114 last week. Can you see him scoring anywhere near that again this week, given how key he really is now to the Hawthorn forward structure?
Well, you could see it. I mean, he scored 112 against Gold Coast down in Tassie. So, yeah, I mean, he's a chance to have a big score out. I mean, you would expect the Hawks to overrun Gold Coast a bit, so there'd be a lot of options down on the forward line. So, I mean, in many ways, that's why I would be more likely, you know, if it was possible to say I'm either going to start Bruce or Polopolo, I would be more likely to start Bruce than Polopolo myself.
Mm. Which makes me wonder, why the hell didn't I pick up Bruce? Anyway, might have just been the timing. But anyway, Birchall, we can probably go past Birchall because he's startable anyway.
If he plays.
What about Luke Hodge? He's been a bit up and down lately. Of course, it depends on how he wakes up in the morning sometimes, of course, with his degenerative issues with his knee. He was startable in that game as a centre with 101. Sort of barely startable, but the previous three games, you know, didn't get more than 86. So what about him, Hodge, against Gold Coast?
Well, I wouldn't be bringing him into my side if I had trades left and had the need to trade in a centre, but if I had him in my side, there'd be no doubt, unless I had six of the best of the midfielders, that I'd want to be starting him this week against Gold Coast. With, you know, he's had a, you know, reasonable run. He had some down games against some of the lesser sides and then Carlton, but 100s most weeks since playing the Gold Coast is pretty good.
Tabs reckons Hodge is going to be rested. Do you see that happening?
Yep, I could see that absolutely being happening, and yeah.
All right, what about David Hale? I suppose in terms of who we'd be replacing, Smith, Lobe, I don't know, well, obviously Ryder, because of course he's got the bye. Yeah, I mean, who else would he be replacing? Vardy, who's not playing. Look, maybe even Cox, because, of course, he did cop a little bit of an injury last week and got subbed. Would you be... How confident would you be that Hale could actually outscore someone like Cox?
I would think that there is an opportunity for that. It wouldn't be my first choice, I wouldn't have thought. But he's been playing quite well of late, so... could definitely come in if you're needing someone at around his price and can't afford more. He's probably the best of the Rucks options at that point.
We're being asked on the chat about whether you'd trade in Hale this week for Sylvia.
Again, only if you had $0 in the bank. I think there's a couple of players around there that might be better value. I mean, even Harvey, who I think he's got Richmond this week.
I'm just looking at prices. So Hale is 305, and someone like Didac is still 255.
Yeah,
I think Didac is probably a better option here.
Yeah,
although against Geelong, maybe not.
Yeah, against Geelong, and as I say, if I could go to Brent Harvey, I'd probably do that against Richmond. Oh, and
we'll talk about him in a moment in later on in the show. But yes, that's a bit dodgy considering what he scored this week. All right, who else? So Max Bailey. Look, I mean, Zach Smith is not really much chopper. Obviously, he's been brought back in. He looks like he's done. He's cooked. He's, you know, put a fork in him. He should really at this point. If it was anyone other than the Gold Coast, they'd put his cue in the rack. But so can you see someone like Bailey? I mean, he obviously scored 87 this week against the soon to retire. Of course, Hudson's not playing. Hudson didn't play this week, did he? I don't believe he did.
No, they played against.
Was it Cordy and...
Roughhead.
Roughhead, yes.
Gordon Roughhead.
So, yeah, that'll be much the same sort of opposition, I suppose, in Smith. I mean, Smith is a better ruckman than Roughhead, but Roughhead was a bit more energetic, and Smith looks like he's done, as I say. So, Bailey did manage 87 this week against Roughhead and Cordy. So, what do you think he can score this week?
I think he'll score zero this week. I think he will be rested this week and Renouf will come in to give him a run, which is a bit dangerous if you're Max Bailey because, as being the good Hawthorn supporter you are, would remember that one Simon Tails Taylor rested 1 week in 2008 and never got back in. So,
unfortunately, that'll be forced upon him, I believe, this week. So, all right. Now, what about those long-suffering, those poor owners who got onto Max Suckling, Molly? Of course, this is the man who I was forbidden from taking, and of course, I've lost 300 points on that deal due to a certain co-host of this podcast who I won't name has forbidden me from taking Matt Suckling and thus diddling me out of 300 points. I don't know who that was.
Thank you the last 2 weeks.
Yes, well, obviously, so startability, Molly. So 64 last week, and I think you might have scored something similar the previous week. 74 the previous week against the Blues. So what does he do against the Gold Coast?
Well, I mean, I think he's probably going to have a good game if he plays, but I really have a strong feeling that he won't play this week. As I said earlier, a few players to come back in. He has missed two games this year with back injuries, which, you know, you often hear say, you know, the flight's going to hurt them. So I would not be surprised if he's rested this week, being his first really big full year in the big competition. With the flight to the Gold Coast, not much point, no value in winning the game really. So I think they'll put his cue in the rack for this week and, fire him up and, you know, wind up the spring and let him loose on Geelong.
Speaking of queues in the rack, so what about the Isaac rack? Is the queue going to be in the Isaac rack this week, the Isaac Smith rack?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Now, I mean, he is a mature age player, but he's got the body of a kid, if you know what I mean. Yeah. He is gangly is what I'm trying to think of. And he does... obviously have a body that's built for speed, not for endurance. His numbers have been falling away a little bit lately. Obviously, he didn't have a great game on the weekend and didn't have a huge game against... he played about half a game against Carlton. So I'd be concerned if I was the Hawthorn coaching staff whether I'd actually get a full game out of him in the final And I'd probably want to rest him against the Gold Coast. What do you think, Molly?
Yeah, that's possible. I thought there were other guys who might be rested before him, but again, another first year in the big time might get a bit of a rest to get his body right.
And finally, to round off our biggest talk ever, Molly, 11 players. What about Cyril?
He would be guaranteed a rest. I don't think there's much doubt, which is going to hurt a lot of people who brought him in last week. But
so who do they play in their places? This is, you're knocking about half a dozen. There's seven or eight players out. So are we going to play the Box Hill for this
week? I'm getting my fingers ready. There's Alice. There's Lyle, Renouf, Stratton, possibly Ladson.
But of course there was a big name that you flagged at me at the start
Paul
of the show.
Johnson.
Paul Johnson, the might of Paul Johnson,
the monster. He was upgraded during the week, so he may get a run this week. Yeah. Mm.
So yes, it could be half of Box Hill playing Gold Coast. So it might actually make it a contest. You never know.
Mm.
Yeah, all right. Well, that'll finish off Hawk Talk for not only tonight but this year. Sure to come back in the new year, fresh as ever. But we'll move on to the other side of that game, Molly. Of course, now, oops, I got the wrong list. I got this. So I wanted to actually speak about Barry Hall. Now, a fair amount of the coaches would have brought in Barry Hall, obviously knowing that he had he'd racked up bags of five or six, two or three weeks in a row, and he eventually extended that run to 4 or 5 weeks, I believe. But against Josh Gibson, he looked good in patches, but a eventual score of 64 in Dream Teams, not quite startable enough. So the Bulldogs this week, and of course I think he might have had a down week the week. No, he didn't actually have a down week the week before, but I know they are playing the Dockers this week, Molly, and the Dockers, we've already gone through, they've barely got a team, but they still do have Luke McFarlane, and Luke McFarlane I believe Silvani's still there, so both of those guys are well more than capable of shutting down Hall. But do you think that the Frio team are going to be so shot in the midfield that the Dogs are going to run all over them, and it's going to be like a Bulldogs versus Port Adelaide scenario, and Hall's going to be scoring a big 100, or do you think he's going to, obviously in his last game, that it's obviously very difficult to figure out in the last game how it's going to work out, but it looks like it's going to be a procession to me, given the strength of that, the lack of strength of the Docker team in general. But we're still looking there at McFarlane and Silvani, so there's cattle there to stand on him and do a good job. So how do you think that's going to work out?
Yeah, I think he can have a good game. Now, how much do you get for knocking someone out? That's the real question, because I think I wouldn't want to stand anywhere near him this week if I was a Dockers man, because he has got absolute free range. So
yeah, so you reckon he's going to do an Alistair Lynch?
I wouldn't put it past him. Not saying anything bad about him, because I don't want him coming around to my house, but I think he could have a good game. He's in a hot range of form, but I wouldn't, if from a dream team sense, I wouldn't be looking to pick him up, or if I had him, I'd play him, but I wouldn't be looking to pick him up because it's just a bit risky at that price where you can still get some other guys into your side. So.
Well, I would like to distance myself from those comments. I would like to pay my respects to Mr. Hall and all of his works, and I look forward to watching him in the boxing ring. Hopefully not against...
From a distance.
Yes, hopefully not against my friend here, Mr. Malone. Yes. All right, on the Geelong and Sydney game, Molly. Now, Corey Enright I wanted to mention, because he delivered, I believe it was his lowest or second lowest score of the year against Collingwood in the first game that they played this year. And I had down in the game notes that he spent a lot of time chasing after the Collingwood small forwards. And this is a concern to me in that Friday night game, Molly, that I couldn't... It was one of those games where... There was a lot of rotations in matchups, and every time I saw Corey Enright on that game, he seemed to be on a different small forward, and they seemed to be giving him the run around. And I have this sneaking suspicion they're going to do that again this tonight on Friday night. So I'm going to play a bit of start or sit with Corey Enright, Molly, given that he scored a mid 70s in that game. So I suppose we'll start with one which I've already laid my cards on the table about this one: Enright versus Puopolo.
Enright.
Mm. Enright, well, obviously lower, he's out this week, but Enright versus Danny Stanley.
Stanley.
Enright versus Greg Broughton. Greg Broughton.
Mr. B.
Yes.
Well, this is a tough one because, you know, there is a thought that he'll play more midfield time, but just with his inconsistency of late, I would probably go Enright.
Versus Paul Duffield?
Enright.
Enright versus Grant Birchall?
Birchall.
Enright versus Matt Suckling?
Suckling. It's biased Suckling.
Yes.
Either or, those two are pretty similar.
Alright. Enright versus Sam Fisher.
Fisher.
How about Jason Graham?
Enright.
And Enright versus Brady Rawlings.
No, I would be Enright.
Enright versus Jedad Cock.
Enright.
Versus Pierce Hanley, who scored 95 last week.
I think I'd still go Enright because they have Sydney, so I'm still a little bit nervous about Sydney shutting players down on the SCG.
Versus Shannon Hearn, who scored 46 last week and was tagged, I believe.
Enright.
No, of course, we haven't got Chris Newman anymore, so... Oh, well, Deledio. Yeah, well, what about Deledio? Scored 82 last week. He's sort of falling away a little bit towards the end of the season.
I would take a coin out and flip it. That either or, that one.
Tapscott's probably not that. Well, actually, no. Well, Tapscott did. He has been on the field. Look, 41 last week. It's almost silly to mention it. But I suppose, you know, versus Tapscott.
Enright.
And about versus Nathan Bock, who of course will be lined up on Buddy this week.
Bock.
Yes. And I suppose the final one would be. Versus what has to be the consensus rising star pick now, of course, Dyson Heppel.
This week?
Yes. Oh well, of course, Enright. he's going to be not playing.
That was an easy one.
It's been a long season, folks. Yeah, that was a Dorothy Dixie, wasn't it?
I like that. More like that.
Well, at least I gave you an easy one there at the end. Right, on the Sydney side of that game, Molly, Gary Rowan, and this is another one for next year. He was obviously doing the rounds of the media in terms of being spoken about on the Monday night shows, and I think he might have got a run last night on the AFL 360 on AFL Insider. He's certainly the big highlight from the week. But you look at his numbers. I mean, he might have done some good individual efforts, but still only managed 61 in Dream Team, 79 in Supercoach. But he's going to be priced at about 40. I'm not sure. Actually, if he manages another 60 this week, he'll probably be priced at early 40s, maybe up towards 45 if he scores, you know, somewhere near 70 or 80. I don't see him as a dream teamer, Molly. I see him as a sort of a Patrick Dangerfield type. He's not a ball winner. He might do excellent things when he gets it. He might, you know, perform pressure acts and do one percenters. But I just wanted to, you know, include him here as a, you know, because obviously the hype is... pretty high this week. Do you see any fantasy relevance in Rowan next year?
Yeah, I think he caught it well. I mean, I was just thinking about it as you were talking before you said it, and the analogy with Paddy Dangerfield's a pretty good one at the moment. I think unless he gets put back in that halfback role for the Swans, maybe taking over for possibly...
Nick Keneally, of course, so I believe it's his last year, or could be his last year. He might be
going I was going to say that if Keneally gets dropped or traded or you know, goes home, whatever, you'd think that Rowan, off that back line, could turn himself into a fantasy prospect. But, yeah, I mean, I think he's someone to watch. I mean, he looked okay during the preseason this year, but... just didn't do enough. So, you know, he's someone to keep an eye out in the future to see whether he can turn it on.
Yeah, Keneally's really fallen away this year. So I think there's a spot there for him if he can stay fit. But obviously, you know, criticise his fantasy scoring, but he is coming back from a pretty serious injury, which he sustained in the gym, of all places, in round four. So if we're looking for comeback players next year, I mean, he's not got anything to come back from, because he's still a young player and he hasn't had anything like a fantasy-relevant year so far. So he's a bit of a trap for me. He might look good in the preseason and people might start talking about him, but he's just not going to get enough of the ball, I don't think. All right, on the St Kilda and North Melbourne game, Molly. Oh, this game, this is one of the most annoying games of the annoying fixtures of the season to me. Every time I watch it, and I almost scream at the TV, please, Brad Scott, or before him, please, Dean Laidley, Fantasy Antichrist, stop playing into St Kilda's hands, because St Kilda put a man behind the ball. In this case, it was Sam Fisher. And North Melbourne allowed it every single time. And even in that game, Brad Scott still allowed it. And they still had the same matchups. They still allowed Jones to go to Wells. They still put... who was it? Ferrito to Goddard, which never works. They've had Brawlings tagging Del Santo, which never works. And it just... And, of course, the big move that he made in the second half was switching Hanson with Peterson. But... that was the only reason that was going to work is because Hanson was getting smashed by Riewoldt. So what did he do? He got smashed up the other end as well. And Peterson is, you know, obviously showed that he can do it at both ends where Hanson can't. And it's just, oh, they're just such a frustrating team to watch, North Melbourne, from a coaching point of view. You always know the players are going to give their all, but even they seem to give up in the end, and they just got rolled over. And of course, we'll talk about Brent Harvey in a minute. But on the St Kilda side, Molly. What about Sam Fisher, just specifically for this week? Because I know a lot of coaches would have got him in for the last month or so. I think we might have reported about 3 or 4 weeks ago that the Footy Utopia boys were big on Sam Fisher, and some people might have followed their advice. But Fisher in the last couple of weeks, 55 against the Swans. I don't know whether we still take notice of the Swans effect, but 72 against the Ruse, even though he was loose man in defence. He had a very poor first quarter, I believe, I remember, in pure stats terms, but he was loose a lot, and he might have had one of those games where he was punching and spoiling more than he was actually, you know, getting actual stats. So against Carlton this week, what do you expect out of Fisher?
Well, he's got a good record against them, so you'd expect him to do okay. I'm not sure Carlton really do many tagging forward jobs, so...
Well, they used to. They used to when Carrazzo was at his peak of his form, but Carrazzo's had a pretty poor year.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's been good D&T-wise, but not necessarily playing-wise, so... I think he can still do... He can bounce back this week. It's a pretty important game for them. Maybe not so much for Carlton, who can't go anywhere. But, I think St Kilda need the win. So, you know, he's a chance to have a good game, I would have thought. I would be considering him if I was needing to trade someone in. I'd just have to see who else is about that price range.
I'm just looking at the match notes from round 7, of course. If you go to the Sam Fisher player profile on Feed and Footy and you click on news items for Sam Fisher, you can go look at the archives, and I think it's the 16th one there, so you have to click through to the second page. So I had down there, drifting back from wing to be loose in defence, and I think in that game, from memory, it was also Heath Scotland who was doing the same at the other end. So 22 possessions and 11 marks of 4 tackles. So that's a pretty solid return, and I think Carlton also do like to have a loose man in defence, so I could certainly see that happening again. And it was 110 and 120. Did you already mention that in that round 7 game? So,
yeah.
Yes, pretty good numbers and pretty good in terms of role there. So that might be a good start for him. In terms of startability, Molly, Jason Graham did a defensive job this week. On who was it? Was it Zeeble? Or I knew he was following. No, that's right. He was staying deep in defence on Lindsay Thomas. That's right. So do you see him doing the same again this week for someone like Eddie Betts? Because I mean, he could be loose in defence, or he could do that sort of tagging role on either Betts or Garlett. So which of those do you see Graham doing this week, Mullin?
I think it'd be more of a tagging job, depending on who they have in and out. So, you know, that could affect his DT score. But he has a good... he has a good average against them, better than against most of the other sides he has. He's got a plus 11 on him, so hasn't scored a lot of hundreds against them, but you know, this could be the week that he does that as well.
Now, what I need to do is to go through to that match report and figure out who it was actually playing on both of those players. So we have... it was Blake on Waite, and it was Gilbert on Judd, and Dempster was on Walker. It was Baker on Betts, and I don't think Baker's playing at the moment, is he?
No.
I don't have who was on Garlett, because I had Graham down as not playing a role in that game, so, yeah, I don't have... Where's Garlett? Was he even playing that game? Yeah, I didn't have a matchup for Garlett in that game, and he kicked 3 goals from 8 touches. Yes, so it's a bit of a strange one, that one. Maybe I just missed it, but I didn't think there was actually a matchup for those two. So maybe they've sort of played a bit loose with Graham on, say, Garlett. Maybe he sort of lined up and shook hands at the start and said, you know, see you later, see you at the end of the game. So yes, interesting to see what Ross Lyon actually does with Graham this week. So that one's a bit up in the air. All right, on the other side, Molly. Brent Harvey, is it all over for Brent Harvey? He looks like he's given up. He looks like he's an angry old man. And he wants all these blokes to get off his lawn, and he's about ready for the retirement home, I think, Brent Harvey. I believe he's probably going to play on next year, but he looks like he doesn't want to be there at the moment. So what about from a fantasy perspective? If he does rock up again next year, I can't see myself picking him. I can't see him being fantasy relevant. I think he's for the chopping block. What are you with me on that one?
I may have a trade to make around this idea, and he's a little bit tempting. He very rarely plays 2 bad games in a row, and he's coming up against the Tigers. I'm not sure who would tag him from there, unless Tuck or someone like that did. Or Jackson, but I'm not sure about that.
I'll look that up as you're talking, because they did play in round 5. It was actually Hooley who tagged him.
Right. And he saluted with 91, which isn't too bad. So, I mean, I think he's definitely startable and definitely to be considered to be traded in. He's had some big games after having poor games and being called out in the press in the past.
Yes, well, he certainly got called out this week, and there was plenty of video... evidence there of his petulance, and I think it was Caroline Wilson who went as far as to say he was the problem, and he and the older players were the ones who let North Melbourne down. It was younger players, obviously, flip side of the earlier in the season when Harvey called out the younger players. The shoe should be on the other foot this year. It should be this week. It should be the likes of Swallow and Goldstein telling Harvey, well, you know, you need to lift your game. So yes, maybe you will. But yes, look, I am a believer in the variability and sort of regressing to the mean, and it works both ways. If a bloke has a sensational game 1 week, and of course I've now introduced the blue moon icon on FanFooty to grace such performances, and he might, you know, deliver a terrible performance next week, and so it may be that way for Harvey. But I personally wouldn't be risking it. I mean, obviously Didac's the standout choice at any sort of price range in that area if you haven't got him. Right, on the Brisbane West Coast game, Molly, one of those very forgettable games that no one really cares about, and the only people who cared about it were West Coast fans when they realised that they could actually lose it, which was a bit of a strange one. But West Coast tend to not go very well at all in Brisbane. But anyway, on the Brisbane side, this is the first game of the year that Josh Drummond has delivered a Dream Team ton. So I know fantasy coaches looking into the next year like to see the late form of the previous year. And let's say, for instance, you know, if Drummond scores another DT ton this week, that will put his total for the year over 7 games at about 400, so he'll be priced at, what would that make it, 50, No, 60. What would that be? 400 by 7, Molly.
No, 400 by 7 would be...
No, it's actually 500 by 7. My apologies. 500 divided by 7. That's why I was getting confused. So, yeah, that's about 70. So he'll be priced at about 70 going into next year across 7 games. So I'm presuming he might... Well, he'd actually be in the range for a discount. If he's priced at 70, and we know he's finished the season off with two DT tons, Molly, are you prepared to look past his obvious and continual injury proneness to actually see him pulling a decent fantasy season out next year?
So would you say he'd be priced at?
70.
Yeah, still pretty risky. I mean, that's about his average for the last few years anyway. And, 7 games 2010, 6 games 2011... it's a bit of a stretch to get too confident about him going forward.
All right, in that case, let's restrict this to Supercoach then, because he is startable in Supercoach because his average, his best year is 113, and he's been averaging about 90 the last 3 years, and he's averaging 76 this year. So if he pulls out another 100, he'll be priced at about 75. So given that he can score 90s to 100s, and he'll be priced at 75, what about for Supercoach?
Well, for Supercoach,
can you pick a player who's played 7 and 6 games in the last? Well, it'll be another 7. So, 14 games from a possible 44 in the last 2 years. Can you pick a player who does that?
It'd be a fair old risk. I would have had to say it's a fair old risk.
Yes, but we never used to pick Paul Chapman because he was injury prone, and he's turned into he could pull a Paul Chapman, but you just never know with these players. I mean, obviously, Nathan Fyfe, the signature example this year, it looked for all money like he was going to fall over because he was dislocating his shoulder every week, but then he's pulled out a full season, so you just never know with these things. All right, and of course, those who've got Fyfe are up the top of the table, so good luck to the people who took that choice. Now, Dean Cox, Molly. Now, of course, he got subbed this week. I presume he's going to play this week because I haven't heard of any sudden rookie elevations this week from the Eagles. Is he still startable, or do you actually start looking at players like Hale, as we mentioned, and if you've got Bailey or who else would you have? Well, I mean, you might even be looking at Lobie's scores and like what you see, and would you actually start looking at him versus even a player like Smith and say, or maybe even if you haven't got cover, actually benching him and putting Petrie in and going with one of your Mizungus or Smith or Didak or Cracker, starting them instead of Cox?
I wouldn't be going out of my way to do it, but if you are in one of those situations where you need to make up points, if you ever wanted a point of difference and you thought that maybe he'll be rested again early and maybe not put up the big scores that he's able to, you are pretty much assured that your opponent will have him. So, if you're after a bold move, there may be no bigger bold move than to not play Dean Cox.
Yeah, so I think that's one of those ones where if you think you're struggling and you think that the other opposition's got a better side than you, it's one of those ones where you want to increase, as I said, the points of differentiation, and that would certainly be a point of differentiation if you decided to bench Dean Cox. All right. Now, in terms of midfielders, Molly, finishing off the season with a flurry, there's been no better example of that than Nathan Van Berlo, who has averaged... Ooh, what's that? That must be easily 120 across the last 5 weeks. Now, I'm not sure that's not since the sacking of Neil Craig. I think it might have happened beforehand, because when did that happen? That must have happened about 3 weeks ago after the... 3 or 4 weeks ago after the showdown. Well, no.
I think it happened before the showdown.
It did happen before the showdown. So, yes. So he's averaged... He'd scored 2 DT tons in the games up to round 18, and he's scored 5 DT tons in the 5 games since round 18. So, obviously he likes Mark Bickley. He and Mark Bickley seem to get on like a house on fire, Molly. So, just for this week for the Eagles, if you've got unlimited money and maybe you've got a Stanton, for instance, or a Watson, who obviously have got the bye this week. Would Van Berlo against the Eagles be your number one priority, given his magnificent recent average?
I wouldn't have thought so off the top of my head. I would have thought there was probably some other options around that price that may be more less risk, so to say. I'm just checking it out now, but my gut feel is to say there's probably some other options around the midfielders than he at that price, at 400k. So, you know, even Pritis himself against him would be probably, I'd be a little bit more confident about myself.
Well, of course, you mentioned, of course, late last week, or no, it was actually in the after show you mentioned, you said, oh, I've got this sleeper, this smoky. And,
oh, yes.
And of course, I immediately said, okay, well, let's think about the last 2 weeks of the season. Who's got the best draw? That'd be Melbourne. And you'd probably be thinking of an inside midfielder, oh, Brent Maloney? And you said, of course, and that's actually who it was. So, Van Berlo versus Maloney, Molly.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think just being up against Port rather than West Coast would give me more confidence in Maloney, as it did. And, I mean, he's a lot lower price. So, I mean, it would depend. I mean, I wouldn't go for Maloney if I had one trade left and had 400K in the bank. You know, Mark Murphy at 391, even though he's up against St Kilda, to me is a better pick than Maloney or Van Berlo, risk-wise. Now, admittedly, I traded out Murphy to get Maloney, but that was over 2 weeks, not just one.
All right, now, Shinshi's in the chat, I presume that comment's about Van Berlo. He reckons that he sees a young Goddard in him.
No, I think that was earlier. That was for Rowan, I think.
For Rowan, oh, okay. What about if Van Berlo gets classified as a defender? Because he has been coming off the halfback flank, Molly. Can you see Van Berlo being, you know, a Deledio / Goddard type, you know, midfielder who just plays off the halfback line, who was a fantasy lock next year? Because given that he's averaging, I think it's 90, he'll be priced at, you know, sort of mid 90s next year, and of course he has finished the season off with 120s across the last five games.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he'd be right in your ballpark. To be someone to consider for next year with the seasons he's had, a new coach, new role. If he's marked as a defender, I would absolutely strongly consider him.
All right. On the Richmond side, Molly, now there's a couple of players here who have been doing well in football terms, but not necessarily so well in fantasy terms. And I'm talking here about Robin Nahas and Tyrone Vickery. I really like both of their development this year. I mean, we talk about development coaches as a coach, and obviously Damien Hardwick, you know, I suppose we're a little bit biased because, of course, he used to be a Hawthorn assistant coach. But I've liked the development of Nahas and Vickery this year. However, for fantasy purposes, I feel like, first of all, their price and also their scoring potential, their upside, sort of rules them out a bit. I mean, given this historical structure of Dream Team and Supercoach and the way that the Guns and Rookies structure has come to dominate, even me, the last defender of the last of the Mohicans as far as trying to get a mid-price strategy goes, even I can't make a case for Nahas and Vickery next year because they're just at that touchy price, and you can't see them becoming top seven fantasy scorers next year. So are you with me on that one, Molly? That Nahas and Vickery are just they're in that very large mid price band that you just don't want you don't want to have a bar off.
Nahas probably more so. Vickery, you could maybe make an argument for if he was a ruck midfielder.
Mm.
Ruck forward. You could.
I believe actually there are going to be a bunch more ruck forwards next year. So let's say he's a ruck forward. How does that change things?
Well, I mean, just having that dual eligibility would make him more interesting as a player. So if you could set him up against Petrie or the likes, where you could play the best of them each week in the ruck and maybe rest the other one on your forward line. You know, that makes it a bit more. You know, I would argue there's a little bit less risk there with that eligibility that, you know, it gives you more flexibility for cover and the like. So maybe that might make you think about him a bit more. But, yeah, I would say at this stage, I wouldn't be considering it. But you'd have to see how all the cards fall on the table.
I mean, some of it might be reliant on whether, say, Brad Miller goes on, because I think he's probably benefited a lot from Miller being that second forward, that third tall forward, because that structure seems to be working a lot down there. And maybe Riewoldt's role might change. They might bring him up further up the ground next year. You never know.
Well, I mean, that's something that I've looked at over the last few weeks. I think I mentioned in the show in the last few weeks is that I've noticed that Riewoldt scores are getting closer to 100 again, but they're not coming on the back of big bags of goals. So I haven't seen any of the Richmond games, but
he's playing like he was in that sort of first third of the season when, you know, we talked, I think, about how he was turning into a decent fantasy option because he was playing a goal assist role, and you know. Probably more of a successful player in real footy terms than fantasy terms, but he was certainly doing a lot of good things to his Supercoach scores. That was certainly the case.
Yeah, so maybe next year, you know, he's still a reasonably young player, another year under his belt. There was some talk that he's had injury concerns over the preseason, so he may be an interesting one to follow over the preseason and see just what happens with him.
Mm. All right, on the Melbourne Gold Coast game, Molly, this was one of the least relevant games of the whole AFL year, and it wasn't even hugely relevant in fantasy terms, apart from the fact, of course, that Gary Ablett got tagged, which, of course, no one really enjoyed. But on the Melbourne side, look,
I enjoyed it.
Well, yes, okay. Well, but people, I think there was actually someone, it might have even been Caroline Wilson again, who mentioned during the week, Richmond supporters must be sick of Richmond, you know, playing well late in the season to make people excited about next year, because it's been happening for 30 years. The same thing the same accusation could be levelled at Melbourne, because I feel like I'm sick of Melbourne playing against minnows and players like Sam Blees, who of course scored 93 in this game in Dream Team and 121 in Supercoach, playing as a running halfback, getting a lot of rebound and starting a lot of coast-to-coast scoring involvements. That's obviously the hallmark of Melbourne's game. That's about the only stat they're leading this year is coast-to-coast scores. And Blees certainly set up a few of those on the weekend. But I feel like, you know, Blees obviously with the hype he's got this year, and I think he did he get a Rising Star nomination? He should have if he didn't.
I think he did this week, yes.
Yeah, so certainly, you look at his game, and in years past, we would have said, "Ooh, this is a fantasy prospect in the making." Look at his run and carry. Look at how he's playing such an outside game. Look at how he's getting marks across half back. But I feel like nowadays, I look at that game and say he's playing the Gold Coast, who have no forward press. You put him in a game with a forward press, and he'll do nothing.
Yeah.
Are you with me on that? Next year, that Blees might have looked like $1 million in that game. But you'll be pretty much kept, you know, give him sixpence for games next year in which there's actual chasing small forwards who are going to harass him and shut him down.
Well, I mean, yeah, being a little bit tough. I mean, it was the guy's fourth game of football, so you know, I think he's still in that young age group, and he's got big raps on him, and there's going to be, you know, let's face it, we all, I believe, think there's going to be an extra midfield spot for him next year to show how he goes. I mean, he's coming off that leg injury that he got in his rookie year when he was playing school footy. So, without having seen him played, I mean, I'm encouraged by his scores. But, yeah, as you say, the role's probably going to change. He needs to do a bit more himself. And you know, another preseason under the belt and new coach and, you know, Scully not being there could open things up for him.
So you think he's? I mean, obviously he's been playing a halfback flank role. So you see that as being temporary, and he'll actually move into midfield next year.
Well, I have no reason to believe or not believe it. But apart from one, who's the forgotten man down there who went out of
Grimes.
Grimes will be back. Scully is likely to be gone. You know, maybe some shake up. You know. Big raps on him, chance for him to move in the midfield, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, look, and of course Cale Morton. What the hell did they do with Cale Morton? Because he was playing that role the previous month, and was pretty poor at it. But I mean, where does Morton go? They can't stick him in midfield. It seems they can't stick him at halfback. Where the hell do they play him?
I hate to be unfair, but the Mortons are the poor man's Selwoods, aren't they?
Well, I certainly got burnt by his brother earlier this year. But anyway, all right. Yeah. Now on the gold. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Mitch had a good game on the weekend, didn't he?
That's all I've got to say to that.
I was thinking of him when I saw his score.
Couldn't give a bugger what he does now with his life now. He's dead to me. On that cheery note, we'll move on to the Gold Coast side of that game only now. I think it was Roy from DT Talk who might have mentioned on the live show last week that DT Talk do. He's penciled in Nathan Bock into his 2012 Dream Team because, of course, he's had... almost a Van Berlo-like end of the season. He's been scoring DT tons hand over fist. Before last week's game against... this week's game against Melbourne, previously he was 110, 108, 103, 92 in his previous four games, and that includes games against Geelong and St Kilda, which is no mean feat to be scoring DT tons against that mob. So how do you see Bock's role in the Gold Coast backline with... another game into a lot of these kids, another year, I should say, another pre-season into a lot of these kids. Do you think they are going to go past him in terms of use of the ball, or is he going to, you know, get even more because the back line will be more effective? How do you see that working next year?
Well, I mean, it's a very interesting question. He has had good years in the past, and, I mean, this year is stacking up with those... some of his best years. I mean, he's within seven of his best ever. So, being a back, he could very well be a good option. But you wouldn't have thought he was going to be overly underpriced or anything. So, yeah, I'm. Who am I to question Roy, especially after he pulled out one of the great ones in Rockliffe this year. So, I'm not as enthused, but I'm not unenthused either.
I suppose this is another one like Drummond, who is a bit of a Supercoach specialist, because you look at his Supercoach numbers and they're consistently 10 to 15 points above his Dream Team ones. So he probably is one of those ones where you'd want to pick him just in Supercoach. But, he's certainly got a developing side around him, and they're still going to be developing next year. I mean, where do you see Gold Coast finishing next year, Molly? And that might inform your choice a bit.
Well, I think that they would do only slightly better, maybe five or six wins for the year. But, you know, there's a couple of teams maybe dropping down to their level. You couldn't see Port moving up that much. Maybe the Bulldogs will drop off a bit more even so. I couldn't see too many moves. Well, there's going to be Greater Western Sydney, so, you know, there's an extra probably two wins for them. So, they might move up slightly, but I don't see them being a powerhouse or anything next year or even being a, you know, higher, you know, middle of the bottom eight, or what will it be? It'll be bottom ten next year.
Yeah.
So I'd say, bottom four.
Yeah, third quarter would be the best they could hope for. If they can get to sort of 12th or something, that'd be good. Yeah. All right, now the final game, Molly. I'm not going to talk about who Essendon played because they're pretty much witches' hats. So the final player we're going to talk about in the Coach's Box 2011 is another one. Now, did I see Roy? No, I've heard talk around the traps about David Zaharakis, Molly, as a fantasy scorer. Now, he's... Top of the pops on the Dream Team scores this week, Molly. Of course, he didn't get the star from you. Of course, that was... what did he? Actually, I think he might have. Actually, now that I think about it, I think he did. Yes, I did give it to him because he was the best four-quarter player. Now, there weren't a huge amount of four-quarter players in that game, but Zaharakis was certainly one. And now, of course, Collier got all the plaudits because he came off the subs bench and turned the match in that last quarter and a bit. But... Zaharakis has been doing it all game, and he's been doing it all season. Molly, when you look at his fantasy scoring, he's averaging 90 this year from a full 22-game season. And his standard deviation is a bit of a worry. He is capable of putting in the odd terrible performance, like 42 against the Swans in round 2. He had a 51 against the Dockers in round 12. A couple more 60s I can see there against the Eagles and the... the Pies, so you might be one of those players who does struggle against top eight teams, but then again, so does Essendon, really. But then again, he does cash in on some of the lower teams, obviously 133 this week against Port, 123 against the North, 126 against the Lions. So he's one of those ones where his standard deviation might annoy you from week to week, but you look at his numbers across the course of the year, they are startable numbers, Molly. So what do you think he's going to do next year? Obviously, with reference to what happens in that forward line with, you know, the likes of Monfries, Reimers, Davey, Jetta, they seem to have a huge amount of small forwards, almost too many. So they actually need Zaharakis to play as a midfielder next year, Molly. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, if he has that forward eligibility again, he's an option. I wouldn't take him in as a pure midfielder, but definitely forward midfield, he's someone who will be come under consideration, as we say. So, you know, he's, as you say, he's had a good end to the season. Be a year old, it will be his fourth year. Maybe it'll be breakout fourth year. He's gone up every year. Started off at about 64, 70, 88, you know, maybe higher again next year. So yeah, I think with a, you know, good preseason, he'll be considered by a lot of teams.
I'm just looking, I mean, I had the thought that maybe his scoring might be affected by the ground that he plays at, because of course I am of the belief that home, you know, teams who have their home at the Docklands do tend to play well there and not well anywhere else, and that's certainly true of a couple of teams who play there, including, I suppose, St Kilda. You could probably put them into that category. North, well, perhaps not North, but well, the Blues actually stand accused of that a little bit. But looking at his numbers, so 4 DT tons at the Docklands and 4 at the MCG. And in terms of lower scores, 360 odds at the G and 260 odds at the Docklands. Okay, well, having a look at that, perhaps that's not an issue. So you see, his lack of consistency is probably more to do with the opposition, maybe. So interesting.
He's been consistently inconsistent.
Yes. Well, we can all identify with that, Molly. So that brings to the end the round review, and that does also bring to the end this year of the Coach's Box. So I'd just like to give my thanks to all who appeared on the show during the year, all of those fantasy coaches and major and minor football celebrities. You know, Warney's been on, and Emma Quayle, and we had obviously the players Isaac Smith and Mitch Wallace and Tendai Mazungu, some of whom... I suppose we can say all of whom went on to become significant fantasy players, or Mitch Wallace perhaps a little less, but he did deliver a few good scores here and there. But hopefully we can do that again next year, and certainly we'll come back next year with a full year of the Coach's Box, Molly, and I'd just like to thank you for sticking with me through thick and thin, and hopefully we'll be back here in the... I'm not sure we'll do a draft show, but certainly for the first week of the pre-season next year, whenever that is.
Yep, I'm sure we'll be back bright and early after a big rest. We've had a pretty good year, I think, and what was it, our fifth, going into our sixth now. So, yeah, a lot of fun, and let's hope, you know, maybe there'll be some big changes over the pre-season and have a lot to talk about come pre-season next year. So thanks to all our listeners and everyone who has supported and bagged us, for that matter. They've been helpful as well. And, yeah, well, good luck with your grand finals, and we'll talk to you all next year.
Hey, so I should make a special mention of those hardy souls who stick in the chat, and especially the ones who stayed around. I mean, I know I can see Shintage and Heavy are very... they've been sticking with us through thick and thin. Sadly, our old mate... It was a Geelong supporter who used to give us rubbish every
Phenom?
Phenom, yes. He seems to have disappeared. What do I happen to him? Or maybe I might have... Maybe I might have banned him. That might have been the reason he doesn't hang around anymore. I do tend to do that.
You have a bad habit of that, are you?
I do, yes. Yes, my one-stroke ban policy is a bit of a worry. Anyway, so yes, thank you to all those, especially to all those people who populate the chat. So it's very useful for us to get immediate feedback, and we hope we haven't ignored you guys too much. But yes, as obviously, good luck to all of those who are either in their league final this week or are trying to beat Dr. Dream Team, because I would like to see everyone who is trying to beat Dr. Dream Team, indeed beat him, and I'm sure he's going to be enjoying a donut himself, as I said, from Nathan Fife. So hopefully those who are seeing that as one of their goals can meet it, as hopefully I can as well. So yes, and I'm not sure in what capacity I'll be joining you guys next year. Sort of been keeping that quiet this week, but yes. What's this space for next year? It's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, didn't we talk about the pilot a couple of weeks ago? Who knows that might actually come to pass? And I think 2012 could be a very interesting year. So thanks, Molly.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you all next year.
See ya.